Theater of the Mind.
Schadenfreude, a German word that literally translates as harm joy, is the rather nasty and all too human tendency to feel pleasure or satisfaction at someone else's misfortune, failure, or humiliation. While this can describe the sadistic enjoyment of someone's true suffering, it can also be used to mean the rather petty and smug satisfaction of seeing someone who disagrees with you be proven embarrassingly wrong. And if that someone was particularly nasty and condescending about that opinion, the aforementioned smug satisfaction is all the more sweet. The reason I got to musing on this concept is my recent revisiting of one of my favorite horror movies of all time, John Carpenter's The Thing. When it debuted, the film was, to put it mildly and tactfully, not well received. To put it bluntly and matter-of-factly, it was pretty much universally shit-canned. It didn't bomb at the box office per se. At least it made its $15 million budget back, plus $4 or $5 million in profit, but it wasn't very successful either, and the critics positively savaged it. The film was described alternately as boring, derivative, nihilistic, bereft of warmth or humanity, sterile, poorly acted, and lacking in pacing, continuity, and character development. A few critics didn't hold back, calling it instant junk, a surprising failure, Carpenter's most unsatisfying film to date, and, drumroll please, the quintessential moron movie of the 80s. Gee, if I didn't know any better, I'd say they didn't like it very much. Go figure. But eventually, the home video revolution hit. The film was rediscovered, and now it's widely regarded as one of the greatest and most influential horror films of the latter 20th century. Eat ass, Vincent Canby, you sanctimonious prick. Any movie you crap on in one of your reviews instantly goes to the front of the line of movies I want to see. While credit was given to the technical accomplishment of the horrific special effects, some even described Rob Bottin's work as genius, unforgettable, and appallingly creative. The effects were nonetheless criticized as too extreme, horrifying, and gruesome, detracting from the human elements of the story. They were dismissed by some as merely atrocity for atrocity's sake, some going so far as to call them obscene. And keep in mind, the movie was released in June of 1982, right in the middle of the summer blockbuster season, directly opposite E.T. In one movie, you had an adorably ugly but sweet and kind-hearted alien who brings several cute all-American children on a wondrous and exciting adventure, bringing them the gift of true friendship. In the other, you had an alien who traps a group of men in a claustrophobic warren of frozen tunnels and commences to biting off heads and arms, melting dogs, exploding torsos, and turning everyone against each other in paranoia and panic until everyone dies. Yeah, that one didn't go over so well with the general movie-going populace. But man, oh man, did I dig it. I love the claustrophobic atmosphere, the awesome Ennio Morricone music score, the unbearable tension of the steadily increasing paranoia of the characters, and, of course, the unbelievably insane and gruesome creature effects. The term body horror was unknown to me at the time, but it was something I knew I really dug. Body horror is a subgenre of horror which showcases the visually graphic or psychologically disturbing violation of the human physical form. While that might technically describe any number of slasher films, in body horror, the violation or distortion of the body is usually not due to a direct act of physical violence. Rather, the body's destruction or transmutation is usually due to decomposition, disease, technological or mechanical augmentation, mutation, or mutilation and recomposition into an altered form. It invokes physical and psychological disgust and plays upon the audience's deep-seated anxieties of physical vulnerability and loss of control over one's bodily integrity. In monster or slasher movies, the audience generally feels a sense of distancing between themselves and the victims on screen. But in body horror, the objective is often to get into people's heads by making them experience the victim's horror and despair at witnessing their own helplessness and destruction. When you mention body horror to a horror movie fan, the first name that comes up is often Canadian director David Cronenberg. He no longer does horror, but when he did earlier in his career, body horror was clearly his bailiwick. While I did see The Thing on the big screen, it was actually in 1984, 2 years after its theatrical release, and I had already previously seen two Cronenberg films, Scanners, which came out in 81, and Videodrome, released in 83. Those two movies, together with The Thing, firmly established in my mind the idea that the corruption of the flesh into something horrible is one of the most disturbing and unsettling themes in all of horror. Later films of Cronenberg's that I saw and enjoyed included The Dead Zone, the insanely twisted and bewildering Naked Lunch, and of course what is considered his body horror masterpiece, The Fly. The Fly, both the original 1958 version and Cronenberg's remake in 86, presented us with a monster that was at once both repulsive and sympathetic, as the main character suffers horrible alterations to his body resulting from scientific research gone awry, and desperately tries to restore his rapidly diminishing humanity. Body horror predates movies, however. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is perhaps the first noteworthy work in the subgenre, and Edgar Allan Poe dabbled in it as well. But H.P. Lovecraft truly broke the genre wide open with hideous depictions of physical corruption, be it due to alien infection, diabolical scientific meddling, degenerative breeding, or transmutation by contact with forces from beyond. Later authors like Richard Matheson, Ramsey Campbell, John W. Campbell, who wrote the story The Thing was based on, by the way, Clive Barker, and Stephen King, continued to hone the craft in literature. Japan has always been a fertile field for body horror, whether it be in movies, manga, or anime. Japanese folklore is absolutely crammed with monsters and spirits that present as weirdly distorted human beings. Side note, if you've ever wondered why so damn many Japanese horror movies seem to always have that creepy girl with the long hair covering her face, it's because there's probably at least 20 or so spirits, demons, and creatures that present that way. It's part of their zeitgeist. It's an image they've all known since childhood. But I digress. Curses, in Japanese folklore, are not so much an evil magic spell, but an actual living, sentient demon created through malice or atrocity. And they're often seen wreaking destructive hell on the bodies of their victims. And it's not just the spirit realm that can tear you apart and turn you into something awful. In Lovecraftian fashion, the scientific mind in its search for ultimate knowledge can produce horrible monstrosities that destroy the body and devour the soul. Modern Japan is one of the science and technology capitals of the world, but the Japanese people's relationship with science and technology is a shaky and often contradictory one, laced with both embrace and mistrust. World War II probably has something to do with that. Manga and anime like Akira show scientific experimentation producing unholy biomechanical hybrids that grow and reproduce uncontrollably, becoming more and more powerful and ultimately leading to cataclysmic destruction. In The Haunt, deft use of body horror can produce some truly visceral gut punches to the audience, either in the makeup and costuming of the actors, or in static or animated props. Movies can provide some great visual examples to springboard the haunter's creativity and inspire some backstories and themes. For example, there's the alien parasite theme, maybe where a biolab is researching a sample of extraterrestrial origin, which escapes containment, starts growing out of control, and begins assimilating the staff and security, producing horrifying, no longer fully human hybrids. They could be seen as a sort of genetic splice where their features are in various states of change into something alien, or an infestation where horrible things start reproducing inside their bodies and erupting to the surface in gruesome ways, like creatures squirming under the skin, tentacles sprouting from chests, and extra eyes or orifices appearing in weird places. The latter example looks even better, in my opinion, if the placement of these additions is asymmetrical and random-looking, as it helps hammer home the idea that this is a human being that's being consumed by an outside invader. Another example would be an attached parasite taking over someone's body, like the head crabs from the Half-Life video game. There's the surgical or medical approach, where a mad scientist tampers with human bodies by adding or rearranging body parts, or even grafting together multiple humans. I know what some of you are thinking, but I would advise against going the human centipede route. That one's likely to draw some complaints and get you shut down. Or augmenting the body mechanically, like in Frankenstein's Army. Mutation via environmental contamination is always fun. Our own G-host Chris has been running that theme for years in his Village Meyer home haunt. Disease can be used to revolting effect, either in wet and gory ways, a la cabin fever, or with rot or plague carbuncles or whatever, though I'd probably choose to avoid the disease theme this year for obvious reasons. And of course, there's the transformation and dehumanization of being taken over by mysterious malevolent forces, like demons, curses, or extra-dimensional beings. The only limit is your imagination. since the starting point is the human body, and the mission is to twist, deform, violate, or corrupt it in some horrible ways, there's endless directions you could take it. The fundamental goal of body horror is to be disturbing, and the most disturbing examples are the ones that force the viewer to see the humanity, or former humanity, of the repulsive being they see before them. That's where we start to slide into Uncanny Valley territory, where something is undeniably familiar, but just wrong. Whether it's a rotting, putrescent zombie from The Walking Dead, the hybridized, ruptured, fleshy nightmares of The Thing, the mutilated, sadomasochistic Cenobites of Hellraiser, or the biomechanical necroborgs of the Japanese low-budget splatterfest meatball machine, it's the recognition of the vestiges of the human being behind the horror that makes the horror visceral. A monster is just a monster, and that can certainly be frightening enough, but a monstrosity that once was human, that tickles a few deeper, darker chords in the shadowy corners of the mind. It forces the viewer to think, that was once a person just like me. That, in the circumstances I've been shown, could actually be me. And that's not a comfortable thought. One thing's for certain, if the majority of your haunt's guests consist of small children, then the body horror route is probably not your best choice. It's definitely a little on the more hardcore side, and it's better suited for at least the over 10 crowd, and of course the harder stuff for teens and young adults. It doesn't have to be a central part of the haunt's theme, just one or two choice examples in a haunt can provide some of your audience's most long-lasting and unsettling memories. Just remember, while pulling off good, effective body horror scares can be a daunting task, you don't need to get all bent out of shape over it. But somebody does. Keep the ghost light burning. From the Theater of the Mind, I'm Revenant, and you are listening to Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.